Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ana Mateo will bring us this week's health report. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, United Nations investigators are accusing the military in Myanmar of carrying out numerous crimes last year during its campaign against Rohingya Muslims. Myanmar's armed forces carried out mass killings and rapes of Rohingya with genocidal intent, the UN investigators said. They added that the commander-in-chief and five generals should be tried under international law for the most serious crimes. In a report, they urged the UN Security Council to set up a court to try suspects or to send their cases to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. They said that the Security Council should restrict arms to Myanmar and order targeted sanctions to punish individuals most responsible for crimes. The investigators blamed Myanmar's de facto leader, Nobel Peace Prize winner Aung San Suu Kyi, for failing to use her moral authority to protect civilians. They said her government was partly to blame for the crisis. It accused the government of letting hate speech continue, destroying documents, and failing to protect minorities from crimes against humanity and war crimes. The report also criticized Facebook for letting the world's largest social media business be used to spread violence and hatred. The company reacted on Monday by announcing that it was blocking 20 Myanmar officials and groups found by the UN to have committed or enabled serious human rights abuses. A military spokesman, Major General Tun Tun Yi, said he could not immediately comment on the UN report. He spoke to the Reuters news agency. The Myanmar government was sent a copy of the report before it was made public. 1 year ago, the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army attacked 30 Myanmar police stations and a military base. To answer the attacks, government troops launched operations against suspected rebels and their supporters in Rakhine State. About 700,000 Rohingya fled the area to escape the violence. Most are now living in refugee camps in neighboring Bangladesh. The UN report said the military action, which included setting fire to villages, was disproportionate to actual security threats. The UN panel said the crimes were similar in nature to genocidal crimes in other countries. Myanmar's government has rejected most claims of violence made against the security forces by refugees. The government has built centers to help refugees return to the country, but UN aid agencies say it is not yet safe for them to do so. The United Nations defines genocide as acts meant to destroy a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group in whole or in part. Such a designation is rare, but has been used in countries such as Bosnia, Rwanda, and Sudan. The UN panel also said there was enough information to support the investigation and prosecution of senior officials in the army to determine if they were responsible for a genocide. The head of the panel is Marzuki Darusman of Indonesia. He said that the commander-in-chief of Myanmar's military, Min Aung Hlaing, should resign until there is an investigation into his part in the violence. The list of generals also includes Brigadier General Aung Aung, commander of the 33rd Light Infantry Division, which directed operations in the village of Indin, where 10 Rohingya captive boys and men were killed. Those killings were discovered by two Reuters reporters, Wallon and Cha So-woo. They were arrested last December by the government for violating Myanmar's Official Secrets Act. A ruling in their trial was expected on Monday, but has been postponed until September 3rd. In April, 7 soldiers were sentenced to 10 years in prison for taking part in the Indin killings. The UN investigators spoke with 875 suspected victims and witnesses in Bangladesh and other countries. They examined documents, videos, and satellite images. Years of state-sponsored discrimination against Rohingya had resulted in oppression from birth to death, the report said. The Rohingya see themselves as native to Rakhine State. They are considered migrants by Myanmar's Buddhist majority and are denied citizenship. In March, the panel's members had accused Facebook of permitting it to be used to support violence. The report said the social media company should have acted quicker. On Monday, Facebook said in a statement, "The ethnic violence in Myanmar has been truly horrific. Earlier this month, we shared an update on the steps we're taking to prevent the spread of hate and misinformation on Facebook."
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Scientists in Australia say they have developed the world's first blood test to find a deadly skin cancer in its early stages. They say the test could save thousands of lives each year. Currently, to check for all kinds of skin cancers, doctors examine or remove a small piece of patient's skin. But researchers say the new blood test can detect one of the deadliest kinds of skin cancer, melanoma, sooner than other methods. In a trial involving about 200 people, the blood test found early stages of melanoma in more than 80% of cases. Professor Mel Zeiman is the leader of the Melanoma Research Group at Edith Cowan University in Perth, Western Australia. her group conducted this trial.
If a thin melanoma is identified early and it's removed, you have a 98 to 99% chance of 5 to 10-year survival.
Researchers explain that the sooner doctors find melanoma, the better. They say that if a thin melanoma is identified early and removed, patients have a 98 to 99% chance of surviving for the next 5 to 10 years. However, survival rates from melanoma drop sharply if the skin cancer is in later stages and has spread to other organs. The World Health Organization says about 132,000 people are diagnosed with melanoma every year. Australia and New Zealand have the highest rates. The website for the Melanoma Institute Australia says that in 2014, more than 1,400 Australians died from melanoma. And in 2017, that number rose to more than 1,800. We get melanoma mainly by exposure to ultraviolet radiation. Patients often have had a lot of exposure to the sun and a history of sunburn. On its website, the WHO says decreasing ozone levels is making the problem worse. The site adds that as the atmosphere loses more and more of its protective filter and more solar UV radiation reaches the Earth's surface, more people will get skin cancer. The new blood test works by detecting something called autoantibodies. The website for the National Cancer Institute in the United States defines autoantibody as an antibody made against substances formed by a person's own body. The body naturally forms autoantibodies when cancerous cells start to appear. In a statement to the press, Zeiman explains that with melanoma, the human body makes these autoantibodies very early. She says the new blood test takes advantage of that fact. However, she warns, melanoma is very hard to diagnose. Researchers are planning more tests for the Australian blood test. They say they hope to improve its accuracy to 90%. The blood test could be available within 5 years. Researchers have said the test will not detect other types of skin cancers. It will only find melanoma. Other health experts say the results of the trial should be considered with care. They urge people to keep checking their skin for early signs of skin cancer. Zeiman says she hopes the new blood test will lead to more people checking their skin. She says that if the new blood test is available at a person's yearly checkup, patients might get skin examinations more often, and more examinations might lead to more early detections of melanoma.
So that's what we're hoping to achieve, is that people will feel more comfortable going for skin checks, that will just up the number of people that are aware and able to get their melanoma identified earlier.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We look back at some of the social issues and cultural changes in America in the 1970s and 80s. In some ways, the 1980s seemed like the opposite of the 1960s. The 60s were years of protest for social justice and change. Many Americans demonstrated against the Vietnam War. Blacks demonstrated for civil rights. Women demonstrated for equality. Many people welcomed new social programs created by the government. By the 1980s, however, many people seemed more concerned with themselves than with helping society. To them, success was measured mainly by how much money a person made. People wanted to live the good life, and that took money. The changes started to become evident during the 1970s. For a while, these years brought a continuation of the social experiments and struggles of the 60s. But then, people began to see signs of what society would be like in the 80s. There were a number of reasons for this change. One reason was the end to America's military involvement in Vietnam after years of war. Another was the progress of civil rights activists and the women's movement toward many of their goals. A third reason was the economy. During the 1970s, the United States suffered a recession. Interest rates and inflation were high. A shortage of imported oil as a result of tensions in the Middle East only added to the problems. As the 1970s went on, many Americans became tired of economic struggle. They also became tired of social struggle. They had been working together for common interests. Now, many wanted to spend more time on their own interests. This change appeared in many parts of society. It affected popular culture, education, and politics.
Let me hear your idea again.
Okay, I want us to watch Jack Lemmon and a group of famous scientists discuss pollution and ecology on Channel 13.
Good. And I want to watch football highlights on Channel 2. Now, guess what's going to happen?
One of the most popular television programs of that time was a comedy series that often dealt with politics and serious social issues. The show was called All in the Family. The family was led by a factory worker named Archie Bunker. Carol O'Connor played Archie, and Gene Stapleton played his wife, Edith. The Bunkers lived in a working-class neighborhood in the Queens borough of New York City. Archie represented the struggles of the blue-collar working man against the social changes in America. He loved his country and was socially conservative in the extreme.
What about John Wayne? Before you say anything, let me warn you. When you're talking about the Duke, you ain't just talking about an actor. You're talking about the spirit that made America great.
Are you kidding?
His opinions on subjects like race and women's equality were always good for an argument with his liberal daughter and even more liberal son-in-law.
Good, I can mail my letter today and it'll get to Washington by Monday.
Washington? Are you writing to Washington?
That's right, Michael wrote the president.
You write to the president about what?
All the things we've been talking about. The pollution of our air, the pollution of our water, the way us housewives have no protection from foods without nutrition, how they make products with harmful things in them. Like, you saw what happened to Michael from that shirt.
You, Michael Stivic, meathead, you have the nerve to write to the President of the United States about your rash?
Edith would always try to make peace.
Maybe he knows a good skin man.
Monday, Monday, happy day.
Another popular program, Happy Days, about family life in the 1950s, offered an escape from from the social issues of the day.
Goodbye, gray sky, hello blue. There's nothing can hold me when I hold you. Seems so right, it can't be wrong. Rocking and rolling all week long.
Music also changed. In the 1960s, folk music was popular. Many of those folk songs were about social issues. But in the 1970s, there was hard rock and punk.
Here's Wonder Mike, Hank, and Master G, the Sugar Hill Gang.
And in 1979, a group called the Sugar Hill Gang brought rap music to national attention with a hit called Rapper's Delight.
And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie, let's rock.
In bookstores, the growing number of self-help books offered another sign of social change. These books advised people about ways to make themselves happier. One of the most popular self-help books was I'm Okay, You're Okay by Dr. Thomas A. Harris. It was published in 1969 and led the way for many other popular psychology books throughout the 70s. Politically, the United States went through several changes during the 1970s. For most of the 60s, the nation was governed by liberal Democratic administrations. Then, in 1968, a conservative Republican, Richard Nixon, was elected president. Nixon won a second term 4 years later, but had to resign in 1974 because of the Watergate scandal. Nixon's vice president, Gerald Ford, took his place. 2 years later, Ford was defeated by Jimmy Carter, a Democrat who, until then, was little known nationally. The election showed that Americans were angry with the Republican Party because of Watergate, but they soon became unhappy with President Carter. They blamed him for failing to improve the economy and for failing to end a crisis involving American hostages in Iran. He lost his re-election campaign to Ronald Reagan.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Reagan, a Republican, won two terms and led the nation during most of the 1980s. For many people, the Reagan years offered a renewed sense of economic opportunity. Reagan reduced taxes, which increased his popularity. But the national debt grew as he raised military spending to put pressure on the Soviet Union. The self-centeredness of many people in the 70s and 80s gave rise to terms like the me generation. And there was the rise of yuppies, young urban professionals remaking older neighborhoods in cities, often displacing poorer people. Popular entertainment at that time was often about financial success.
Premiering Sunday, April 2nd, Dallas, where money buys power and passion breeds conflict.
Dallas was a TV drama about a Texas oil family with more money and more problems than they knew what to do with. It became a hit not just in the United States, but around the world. Actor Larry Hagman played J.R.
Your daddy lacked the killer instinct. He forgave those who transgressed against him. People just weren't afraid of him. And he overlooked old J.R.'s golden rules.
And what might they be?
Don't forgive and don't forget. And do unto others before they do unto you. And most especially, keep your eye on your friends, because your enemies will take care of themselves. Oh, and one other thing. The oil business is a little bit like a poker game. It's good to get caught bluffing early on, because after that, somebody's going to call you when you got a winning hand.
Dallas, Dynasty was another popular series about rich people behaving badly. One of its stars was veteran actor John Forsythe.
Those banks are going to find out that they've got more than they can handle. Denver Carrington is Blake Carrington. And they'll come begging to me to run that company again. I know they will. And I'll make them get down on their knees when they come begging.
There was also Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, a series about real-life wealthy people, hosted by Robin Leach.
Our bustling capital city combines the chic with the freak, the old guard with the avant-garde. So let's go upper deck with a couple of my good friends and run away with the rich and famous.
And at the movie theater, there was the 1987 film Wall Street.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
Michael Douglas played a character named Gordon Gekko, who earns his wealth by raiding companies and illegally trading on inside information.
Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind, and greed, you mark my words, will not only save Teldar Paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA. Thank you very much.
Good triumphed over evil in the Rambo action films starring Sylvester Stallone. He played a troubled hero who had fought in Vietnam. The films were violent, but they represented a more positive view than society had shown in the past toward veterans of that unpopular war. In the 1980s, people came to fear a new disease that could be spread by sex or blood. It was the rise of the AIDS epidemic. At the same time, a new drug, crack cocaine, started a wave of violence in American cities. Technology was also on the rise.
You don't have to be a genius to use a computer. Let Computerland show you how easy it is to manage your own small business or home finances with the Atari 800. Record keeping, information, communication, and a world of new ideas from Atari.
Personal computers appeared in more and more offices, schools, and homes. The 1980s brought stardom to young entertainer Michael Jackson.
They told him, don't you ever come around here. Don't want to see your face, you better disappear. The fire's in their eyes, their words are really clear. So beat it, just beat it.
And no history of the 80s would be complete without noting the rise of music television, better known as MTV.
Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. We got some install microwave ovens. Custom kitchen deliveries. We got some movies, refrigerators. We got some movies, color TV.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.